All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NFL podcast. It's Wednesday. It's October 28th. I'm Doug Norrie, and over there is
James Davis.
And we're coming at you with a cash game podcast for week 8. It's going to be a little different here. And most weeks by now, we've published our cash game sort of initial look at what's coming up for the week, what we think are going to be core plays, barring any big news. Things always do shift around. This week was a little different. We actually took a step back and... Well, not a step back. We kind of hit the pause button because there's so much information kind of hanging out there in terms of injuries, players coming back, things like that, that we haven't published it yet. We'll probably a little bit later in the week when there's a little more clarity, but wanted to talk about, we still think there's like some core plays at some positions that we think are probably, you know, going to be unchanging no matter sort of what happens. But, do you feel comfortable with this approach? I know we talked about it a little bit ahead of time, but usually at this time, we're looking at what we've already sort of written up and spent hours writing up. And this is one of the first weeks in our, I don't know, how many years we've been doing this? 8, 7? How many years we've been doing this? You know usually better than me.
7 years, yeah.
7 years. In our 7 years of doing this, and I think 6 with the podcast, that where we don't have the plays in front of us when we go into the cash game podcast. But, like, I don't know. I feel like you think this is probably the right process, right?
Yeah, and I think actually it probably is going to represent a shift going forward for us as we really look at this, because particularly in football, it's one thing to take an early look at the week. It's another thing to say, here are the cash game plays for the week. And for, you know, more casual users, first-time viewers of the site and so forth, I think it's just better for them to have to wait a little bit but see the clearest picture of what we're seeing, because what's frequently happening, like last week when we had so many running backs come off the shelf, you're not going to have a accurate representation of the cash game picture at all. And there are cascading issues, right? Because if you think you're going to play 3 running backs, 7,000 and over, that's going to totally change the wide receivers you need to look at, right? Where if you're going to play 2 running backs at 5,000 and under, well, then you're going to have a lot of money left over. So I like this. I think I like this process a lot better.
Yeah, we are coming off a pretty strong week, very good week on DraftKings, where we sort of landed on basically almost like a nuts cash game lineup through the course of Sunday, based on what you were saying, sort of those cascading issues. Well, it ended up not being an issue, but cascading sort of decisions based on injury news that was coming in. Actually, even for football, was coming in later than we're used to. Like Aaron Jones makes the trip and doesn't start. That's massive news that isn't almost more akin to an NBA slate than it is basketball or than it is football. So I don't know if that's just the new NFL or we're just kind of, and that's just kind of the spot we were in last week. This week for week 8, a couple things that I could tell just by looking at the sort of the schedule that this was going to be a little bit of a harder week also, mostly because the teams that we like to pick on, Jacksonville, you know, through the air, Arizona to some degree, even Houston, Atlanta, they're all not on the main slate. Some of these New York. So some of these teams that, are nice targets for DFS aren't on the main slate. And there's a lot of close matchups in this one. All in addition to a couple games that have massive lines, like Kansas City's -19.5 right now over the Jets. Okay.
I guess, by the way, people coming in on that Jets side, they saw 20.5 and they thought,
I bet 19. I gave the points with the Chiefs. The Jets are so bad.
You did, really?
Oh yeah, yeah. That might have come down to 19 at this point. I got it at 19.5. Oh, did I get it 19? Doesn't matter. I did take the Chiefs side, whatever it opened at. So let's roll through some of these things. I actually think quarterback, there is a little more clarity here around quarterback than maybe some of the other positions. We're not dealing with injury stuff. We kind of know the matchups. Quarterbacks, as we know, while it's nice to have your set weapons, we've seen time and time again that, you know, a certain wide receiver or even a running back never shifts the line all that much. So quarterbacks, I think we can feel safe, generally devoid of really almost any other information except for maybe weather. Like, right, like, you know, last week, we were pretty high in Mahomes going into Denver, and then the weather looks terrible. The line drops through the basement, and then we have we can kind of get off that pretty safely. I started off with Russell Wilson. I don't love the matchup against San Francisco, but on this slate, it's kind of hard to ignore that he's one of the few kind of sure thing guys that we have left, and we've been talking about this all season. This list of quarterbacks that just exist in this upper tier, right? And that's like Mahomes, it's Wilson, it's Kyler. We thought it was Watson. I think he's probably still there. Josh Allen sort of creeps around it. I'm not sure Lamar Jackson's in this group. We can talk about it. He plays Pittsburgh this week, so I think we can probably just feel okay maybe taking it off because Steelers are such good defense. But Wilson, he's gifted two things. One, unbelievable skill and nice weapons, and a defense that just can't stop a single soul. So they're forced to always keep their foot on the gas.
Correct, yeah.
And so that's just been the theme for him all season. It's they go down, they score really easily, then the other team just goes down and scores really easily. And then they just kind of do this little game back and forth until it's over and they've hit the over. I don't love the matchup against San Francisco because of the pace and the defense, but the other piece feels like Wilson is easily the safest play here on the slate.
Oh, yeah. I mean, his worst game of the season is 22 FanDuel points. His second worst is 25.5, and the rest of them are over 30. So I would go ahead and call Wilson the safest cash game play on the slate. And the 49ers, too, while overall, when you look at their defensive numbers, it looks pretty good. Against the pass, their defensive DVOA is significantly worse. So if anything, I think you'll see Seattle, you know, try to target this even more than usual, particularly since Chris Carson, his status is up and down right now as well. So I think Wilson is plenty safe, absolutely a cash game play. And I think, you know, right now there's a lot of potential tipping points when it comes to running back injuries that might give us some value as well. So I think we can pretty safely pay up at quarterback this week.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of average DraftKings points in the season, Wilson's almost lapping the field. He's 2.5 points more per game than the next closest player on the season. That's Kyler Murray. So, and then it really drops down to like almost 4 points when you get to Alvin Kamara. So, just incredibly safe. Depending on where we land on some of the price points for some of these other guys, I'm not calling him a lock, and that's really only price based at this point. You know, just seeing where we get if we're able to extract value, because if we're not able to extract value at particularly running back, I'm not sure Wilson ends up 100% there. And that being said, you wouldn't be going wrong by playing him and taking him maybe a hit somewhere else. It's just that quarterback tends to be a little more. It's just more stable across the board. So you're typically not taking as big a risk, you know, paying down at the position. The next guy I have, and I mean, to hardcore people that have watched football this season, it's not gonna, or especially fantasy, this is not gonna be any kind of surprise. But Ryan Tannehill is right there. He's not right there with these guys, but he's not too far behind this top group of guys in terms of overall scoring. I think he's listening. I'm going to take out Dak. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, he's the 7th overall per game quarterback on the season, which I don't know. I mean, you probably knew this, right? Like I knew he'd been really good. I probably realized he was like, he's ahead of Aaron Rodgers this season per game scoring. And I think the average fan would have put those two guys, even like average fantasy fan. I don't just mean like the average, you know, Joe Sixpack Sunday guy. I just mean like, the average guy who plays weekly leagues would have looked at Aaron Rodgers and probably said, oh, he's easily outscoring Tannehill, but he's just not. So Tannehill gets a nice matchup this week. It's one of the better matchups on the slate against Cincinnati. I'm kind of thinking we might even end up doing something like a Tennessee stack because Cincinnati is one of the bottom of the barrel basement teams. Thoughts on Tannehill?
Yeah, well, Tannehill's funny because so part of this is utterly sustainable, right? He's the 68.5% completion rate is essentially, it's less than the 70.3% completion rate he had last season. Last season, he had an excellent touchdown interception ratio. He's picking that up once again this year. I think by and large, it looks sustainable. Maybe he's running a little bit hot on the touchdowns, you know, especially with Derrick Henry there, you figure they're going to score down and close with running a little bit more than passing. But even that being said, he's got AJ Brown back. AJ Brown has looked fantastic. He's making it work even when he doesn't have all of his premier weapons too, getting, you know, various different guys big weeks from time to time, Firkser and Jonnu Smith and so on. So I'm somewhat of a believer in Tannehill. I don't think he's on the level with Wilson, but you also don't have to pay the same price for him either, right? And especially on DraftKings where that winds up really mattering, I could probably be talked into it.
Yeah, he's 1,200 less than Wilson on FanDuel. That's material. Yeah, I mean, that's the difference between like an RB2 and RB1, you know, if we're just like looking at tiers. So that the 1,200 makes a difference. The price difference, I think it's not as stark on DraftKings. Let me just look real quick. Yeah, it's about 1,000. It's 1,000 difference, though, when you look at percentage salary cap, that works out to probably be about the same as it is on FanDuel. So
it does, but also just my experience from week to week on DraftKings is that the money just winds up mattering a little bit more. Like, it's rare that we wind up sticking in a FanDuel lineup that just where there's a guy that doesn't feel great, and that is common on DraftKings. So,
this week's as much as that. I mean, early on, right? Like, we're not calculating and setting it now, and then, you know, checking in Sunday at 1 p.m. to see to see how we did. But this week, more than others, I thought when I ran initial just calculations, I was like, "Ooh, Marcus Johnson. Okay, hold on a second, you know." and I don't think even the inputs are all that wrong for guys like him, but it speaks to that this week is pretty tough because the guys who have been doing it all year, DraftKings has corrected their price to make you really think about it. And at that point, you might have to get a little bit into the speculation business. I did think it was funny. I do think DraftKings is kind, only because of the rushing ability, is kind of daring you to play Cam at 5,700. And I get that he's been horrible the last couple weeks since coming back from the COVID piece. But
I think he's hurt. I don't think you can mess with that, even at 5,700. The way he was throwing the ball last week, I think you texted me saying that it looked like the ball was too big for his hands. He's been absolutely horrendous 2 weeks in a row. And even the rushing was there against Denver, so you like to see, but I don't think you can play him. But I think we've only discussed two plays, and we're 10 minutes into the podcast, so I don't know.
Oh, yeah, my bad. I'll throw the third one out real quick, and we can move on. But Derek Carr is even cheaper than Cam. He's 5,500. He's like QB18 on DraftKings or something like that. It's just a mistake for how good he's been. He's just been good this year. He's got a 70%, or maybe even higher, 70% completion rate. The touchdowns and interceptions are about 2-1. He's been taking a few more shots downfield. I think gets an okay matchup here against Cleveland. It's mostly just the price. Like Carr is in the Sam Darnold, you know, let me look. The other guys around him are Tua, who you don't know anything about, although I find that to be somewhat interesting, but you can't play him. Tua, Jimmy Garoppolo, Drew Locke is 200 less, Sam Darnold. Like, he's in this bottom tier of guys, and it just is, it's a mistake. So anyway, just to point out, and I do think there's a world where at 5,500, like last week with Herbert and Burrow, we really sat there and stewed on it. I think there's a world in DraftKings where you can play these guys in the right matchup. So Carr, I liked Burrow and Herbert more than Carr last week than I do like Carr this week, but I do think Carr is an interesting guy. Okay, so let's move on, because I think those quarterbacks, I think we are going to be picking between some combination of those guys, short of some other news. At running back, though, the situation gets a little hairier. Well, where do you want to start here? Because let's start by this way. Are there any running back plays that you think are just right now safe plays? Like, it looks like Michael Thomas is not going to play again this week. Would you put Kamara back into the cash game group here with Thomas looking very... The last note that I saw on Thomas, but it was he looked like he was unlikely to play. And if not, let's move on to someone that you do think is safe. But where do you want to start here with running back?
Yeah, so I think the Thomas thing, I wouldn't rule him out just yet. Right now, the note is that he could miss week 8. I know that it was close last week. Situations like that, this is why talking cash games early in the week just sucks, because you can literally do this for 6 different guys running back and say, well, it looks like he'll play, but he might not play, rather than at the end of the week when we'll be able to say, yeah, this guy's out, so play that guy, right? I think it's just a lot more clear. If Thomas were to sit, Kamara becomes totally playable again, even though it's a tougher matchup against the Bears. And there were just a few situations where you can say essentially the same thing. Aaron Jones, it looks like he's going to play. He was hoping to play last week. He didn't. Jamal Williams wound up getting it. Joe Mixon, it's kind of the same thing where he's currently, I think... Oh, yeah, it's been upgraded to day-to-day as of a couple days ago, so that could mean anything, right? If he sits, Gio Bernard becomes a great play again. The new addition to this list of questionables is Chris Carson. Carson left the Sunday game against Arizona early, and he's been considered week-to-week, so I guess that's worse than day-to-day?
Yeah.
I'm not sure, because they only play once a week anyway. I don't know if these guys know that, but I think... You know, kind of common consensus is that he'll just wind up missing this week. But again, that's not set in stone. So
Carlos Hyde's got a questionable tag on him too. Exactly. And so are we going all the way down to DJ Dallas? So let me just rewind, because you threw out a lot of names there, just so we can like synthesize some of this quickly and not move on. But
well, there's nothing. I don't know that there's much to synthesize other than the main point, which is that there are a number of things that you're going to have to keep an eye on. So right now, assume build into your time to either check in on our injury article, which will be up sometimes Friday night, sometimes Saturday, depending on you know, if they make any definitive declarations on Friday. Just plan to keep an eye out for that, because right now there's nothing useful we're going to be able to say about any of these plays. They're all plays. All the things we've listed so far are definitely plays if they're, you know, the key component winds up going out. And probably, you know, if these guys wind up playing, then all of these come off your radar. So, and there are a couple safe plays we can get to too, but I just wanted to give a big picture view of these before we went into this.
And we'll get a little bit more into the game by game thing, but I wanted to roll through some of the other issues that you have at running back this week. And besides the ones James just mentioned, like, you have the Dalvin Cook and Madison thing. Like, Cook looks like he's coming back or could come back, and they're underdogs. You have a whole new situation in KC where they were like fine giving Le'Veon the ball last week and he looked okay. So that's kind of the end of that situation for everybody. You know, at times I've been like into Myles Gaskin, and now you have Tua under center and you just have, they could be just running RPO stuff. Like, you have no idea what they're going to be even running at this point. So you have to, you just have to kind of take a wait and see on these guys. Or quickly, do you think there are guys right now that almost independent of news? I have two guys that I think I feel pretty comfortable with, especially if just like one cheap running back came in, and maybe not even if like, and maybe if like every other situation goes sort of sideways in terms of like Michael Thomas plays and all these guys. Like, I have two guys that I think I want to throw out there for you, but I don't know if you think there were like one or two real just stable, can feel good about it even here on Wednesday.
Well, yeah, I mean, assuming that you get the money to pay for it, you can certainly play Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
He's got a great matchup against Cincinnati this week. You know, he wound up being playable even in what amounts to the toughest matchup for opposing running backs in Pittsburgh. So Henry is totally viable. As always, though, you're going to run out of money eventually, right? So he's a good play. He's also $9,500. We've seen historically that you can often fit a $9,500 running back in, but you can't always fit a $9,500 running back in. Like, if all of these running backs just go the wrong way for us and they wind up like playing or being on a timeshare or whatever, all of a sudden $9,500 is going to be tough to come by, right? Because, yeah, we're going to be able to find some nickels and dimes at wide receiver like usual, I think, but there are some good pay-up options there as well. So I just don't think Henry's a lock. I mean, and I don't, you know, it's not going to make one sound very smart to be like, yeah, play Derrick Henry against a bad defense. But right now, I think he's established himself again as just the safest overall option. You know, the touches are 20 plus a game. He gets all the touchdowns down and close, 7 touchdowns in his last 4 games. So yeah, if you can play Henry, play him, but it's just no guarantees that you can.
Yeah, he was the guy. I wouldn't mind going back. I think I could probably talk myself into going back to Kareem Hunt. He was a chalk option last week. We had him on FanDuel, but not DraftKings, and that ended up being, you know, working out fine. But the intention there is still to just kind of play him almost every snap. I know he sort of disappointed in terms of no touchdowns last week, but the usage for me is still what I would deem to be very much in the safe range. And that is that game was a big total, 53, Cleveland's 3-point home favorites here against Las Vegas. I would probably put Hunt in that group of guys that I'd feel fine going back to. And I'd actually be interested to see his ownership because, again, he was a chalk play, a heavy, heavy chalk play last week and underperformed relative to his price. But I don't know.
Well, no, he didn't. Last week he was fine on his price, right? He was 7,000. He scored like 18 and change fantasy points.
Did he really? Wait a second. He sort of
17.7. Yeah, he had a receiving touchdown.
Okay. So anyway, my bad.
But he's also much more expensive. So there's a lot of moving factors with Hunt, where he's 1,200 more than he was last week, but he's also got a fantastic matchup. I mean, in terms of DVOA against the run, Vegas is second worst in the entire NFL, right? Just barely ahead of Miami, and then that group is significantly ahead of the field from there. So, yeah, this is about as good a matchup as it gets, and I think if you don't wind up being able to afford Henry, Hunt is actually a pretty decent consolation prize.
Let's go to wide receiver. Actually, let's take a quick break, and then we'll go to wide receiver.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Wide receiver is, so, okay. Wide receiver, more than any other position, at times can be, look like a list of guys who were good last week. And that's, and sometimes it's guys that are just kind of good every week because the price doesn't adjust. But often it can be tempting and sometimes correct to just go and look at, like, the, you know, 1 week's worth of production and assign some number higher or lower than what the player has done on average or, like, on a median, you know, base over the course of a season, and assign that number as the new number of targets. And I'll give two examples, and I think they're obvious. One is Devontae Adams, and the other is Tyler Lockett, right? Both are amazing last week. Both are excellent receivers. So there's nothing about their skill here that we're not talking. I'm not talking, you know, one of these, like, bargain basement kind of guys that comes out of nowhere, you know, like Jeff Smith gets 10 targets for the Jets or something like that. You're like, hell yeah, let's go back to the well. These guys are pedigree guys that have just completely break it out of the box weeks. And I wonder, like, right now, neither of those guys are in our cash games. I have their numbers set at what I think is, like, the realistic expectation if games play out, you know, all, you know, for every game of the season. And I'm wondering if we're, you know, what our process is in guys like this. I don't know if it sounds like I'm stumbling. You can't give Tyler Lockett 20 targets. That's how many he had 20 targets last week, and he had not top double digits any game before that, right? So, like, what's the realistic target expectation for a guy like Tyler Lockett? Devontae Adams, different situation because he's really, really expensive, and we have a long history of him just getting completely and utterly, you know, just only looked at by Aaron Rodgers when he's healthy. You know, I have him at a higher target share. But, I mean, I set Tyler Lockett at 8 and maybe 8.5 targets for this game. And I don't think you can really go higher than that. And I think that, like, the 20 is tempting, but that just hasn't been the plan for the six previous weeks. So, like, what are your thoughts here on these two guys?
Yeah, so this is one of the most complicated situations to assess in all of DFS projection, in my opinion, because football opportunity is so dependent upon a couple of different factors that it's very hard to weigh how these are going to change from week to week, right? So on one hand, there's game script, you know, is my team in a position where it needs to pass? In addition to that, there's cornerback matchups, right? So, you know, if Metcalf isn't getting open, well, that's really going to help Lockett, and vice versa. You know, if Lockett draws the tougher corner matchup, then it's going to be Metcalf that gets more of the target share. There's just how the quarterback is feeling it. It's how things go early, right? A guy goes 1 for 5 on his first 5 targets or has a bad drop. Like, there are just so many things that can go both right and wrong for a wide receiver that this can be extremely difficult. The weird thing with Lockett, and you wouldn't have never guessed this going into the season, is that he's just been super boomer bust. So he actually had one other double-digit target game against Dallas, but he's got two games now where he had 32.5 and 45.5. FanDuel points, which is just otherworldly. Like, you know, the best wide receivers in the league would be happy to have one of those games through a whole season, much less 2 through 6, right? But then the two games that are in between those, he was just awful. He's having 5 fantasy points, basically. So I think setting the target number, I think my gut feeling is that 8.5 is probably too low. I think that the other major thing that we want to think about with wide receivers is that there is a significant recency bias. Like the targets you got last game are infinitely more important than the targets that you got in the first game of the season, in my opinion. Maybe not infinitely, but significantly. And I think if you want to look at that, like, I'd almost look at the first 3 games of the season and say, okay, in those games he had 8, 8, and 13, and kind of, like, middling out from there, which would have him a hair over 9 targets, like 9.25, something like that would be right. But this is a long look at how the sausage is made here. We do this for every player, by the way, so if you don't, maybe you want to head over to dfsr.com/deals and get access to these projections, because this is a really a painstaking process for us. But yeah, I don't know. I think, obviously, you can't go 20. Maybe even double digits is pushing it, but I don't think you just want to take the average or even the median on the season and go from there.
I mean, look, the median, I'll move on after this. The median was Well, okay, so I take it back. So the average, I was wrong by one number. The average is 9.67 and the median is 8. So maybe the realistic number is somewhere like 9.25 or something like that. Like if we're looking at those, and just using those numbers is probably like, and by the way, that number ends up being to right where you kind of like walk through through the process. And I think that probably is ultimately correct. And I just, we said we've been doing this for 7 years. It's 7 years of, I find that this is like the one sort of theme that it comes up, and I get it, and a lot of times it is correct, so it's not like a bad process, I think. And I think, yeah, in the NFL, recency bias does weigh in more than, you know, say baseball, obviously, right? And basketball is a contextual thing more than maybe the two other sports are. But anyway, I kind of want to just talk that out because I knew we might not necessarily disagree about it, but I thought it was material to bring up, like sort of how we end up walking through the process. And then with Adams, not to have to go back through the whole the process here, but where do you see Adams? I'll do it this way. Where do you see Adams' safety compared to Kamara and Henry? I think that's the better way to put this one, is when you look at, because this is the same price tier now we're talking about like this $9,000-ish price tier. Yeah, 9-1, that's basically where Kamara and Henry are. You're not going to be able to play all three. If you had to rank the three in terms of priority for going into this week, let's assume Michael Thomas doesn't play. Rank the three in terms of priority. Where would you put Adams? Because his price tier is now having you basically ask that question, and he's coming off, like, the guy on a per-game basis is the best wide receiver in football this year. So,
yeah, I'd put him right there. I think, and there are a couple of reasons for that. The matchup, once again, is fantastic against Minnesota, bottom six team in the league in terms of DVOA against the pass. I think that the way Green Bay relies on Adams is right there with Henry and others. I also think, and you get a little bit of extra cushion with the half point PPR and the full point PPR on, you know, whatever site you're playing on. I think as well, we've seen just a long track record of this, right? Like if you wanted to compare him to Lockett, now he's 1,900 more than Lockett. So it's certainly not apples to apples there, but we've seen that when healthy, and when Rodgers is playing well, that this is just sort of the plan, right? He's so definitively better than the rest of the guys there that he's just going to get thrown the ball. And I think the other major thing, and I think people miss this sometimes, is that in football, opposing defenses can just decide to sell out to try to take out a guy, right? Mm-hmm. And so with someone like Lockett, you would assume that last week that Arizona wasn't selling out just to take out Lockett, right? Because they also have Metcalf. Metcalf's been better. Lockett has been kind of, you know, cast aside in some games this season. With Adams, but after seeing last week, you can imagine a case where the Niners go, oh, well, geez, we're not going to let them do that to us, right? Like, we're going to double him a little bit more. Or, you know, there's steps you can take. But with these definitive number one wide receivers, they just deal with this every game, right? So you can't do, everyone knows you're supposed to stop Devontae Adams. But, you know, it's like Mike Tyson said, like, everyone has a plan until they get hit, right? And so you can plan to stop Adams all you want. Basically, no one has demonstrated an ability to do so. So, yeah, all that taken together, I think he's plenty safe. If I had running backs I felt comfortable with in that $7,000 to $8,000 range where I could, you know, pay a little bit less and pay up for Adams, I'd be happy to do so. Because, you know, one of the things that we've repeated how many times on Sunday while we're sitting there going, I hate all these wide receivers at 7,000, right? Yep. Like every single one. Metcalf, we wound up playing Metcalf and we hated it going in. And we were like, this is the worst play in our lineup, and we wind up getting burned on it, right? So I really don't mind locking up wide receiver safety
here. Yeah, look, we have Adams projected for the most overall points on the slate, right? So like for a flex, you know, I'll just call it the flex position because that just encompasses the running back and wide receiver and tight end. excuse me, we have him right there with Kamara, and he's basically a point and a half. Oh, no, excuse me, he's a... No, sorry. I was looking at wide receivers. He's three and a half points higher than the next highest wide receiver, who's Keenan Allen on slate, who I love. I wrote up Keenan Allen as well. So, yeah, I think I'm with you on Adams. I did write up Allen. Allen remains underpriced here. The price comes, we played him pretty happily on both sites last week and were rewarded because, and I was actually shocked by how little he was played based on the matchup and based on what's happened with him with Justin Herbert. Like, he's just been an absolute beast with Herbert around. I don't know. It's one of those ones, again, where I saw the ownership and I was like, what? Like, what is that? And I was happy about it because I'm like, what is everyone looking at here? This guy's been double-digit targets on lock. He had the two-target game, but that was just it was just said that it was back spasms. Like, we got a definitive word. It was back spasms is no longer an issue. And that was it. And then he just goes out there, gets 13 targets, goes 10 for 125 against the worst pass defense in football. And away you go. I have no problem going right back to him this week. So the matchup isn't as juicy. So against Denver, a little bit slower pace. Denver has a better defense. But look, young quarterback, we now know the plan. It's like sort of like Adams light, right? Like, if that's, is that a way to put it? Because it's like, oh, this is just the plan. The plan is to get him, to move him all over the field and get Justin Herbert, get him the ball. And they run a bit more. And that's it. Is there anything more to discuss here with Keenan Allen?
No, he's too cheap. And, you know, we've seen that he will stay too cheap when he's not producing outsized touchdowns. And, you know, happened again last game against Jacksonville. So I don't know if you can just say that's who he is at this point, a guy who's going to chew up, you know, yards between the 20s and not get in the end zone as often as he needs to. But Herbert's good enough, and I think this Chargers offense is good enough that I don't think there's anything like endemic to Allen that makes it difficult for him to score touchdowns. I just sort of feel like that's been bad luck. So yeah, I think if he's going to continue to get this target share and catch 10 balls a game, he'll be getting in the end zone as well. And yeah, I think he's a fantastic play. As soon as he does, by the way, he'll be like mid-8,000s right away. This is just a price. Sometimes you can just see it. You're like, oh, right. As soon as this all comes together, he'll be right there with the top guys. And assuming he stays healthy, I think he's on that track.
Yeah, and he had 2 targets inside the 5 last week, and they just didn't convert, right? And I will say neither of them were close, but they were there. The route was there, right? And that was they're going to go down as red zone targets. But so it wasn't even like he's on the field in these down and close situations as well. He's not goal line. He's not a goal line guy, but he's, you know, the next level back. And so I do think the touchdowns will materialize at some point, or a touchdown will materialize at some point. Let me just roll through a couple of cheap names. We don't need to go too far into them. I'm interested in the Cleveland wide receiver situation with no Odell Beckham. Rashard Higgins saw a decent target share with him out. We could see a bump up for Jarvis Landry. Higgins is the better, probably downfield comp for Odell. I mean, he's not Odell, but he does he is more of a downfield threat. So I could see Higgins is kind of like close to a lock for me in cash, at least on DraftKings at 4,200, maybe a little closer on FanDuel. And then depending on the Michael Thomas situation, we did saw, it came so close to playing Marquez Callaway in cash last week on DraftKings at 3K and just didn't pull the trigger. I ended up like kind of swapping it for Traquan. And I was so regretful because the track, I was just like, man, the Callaway thing probably is better for the price. And he ended up getting there. Price is only 5,000 on DraftKings, 5,000 on FanDuel, 3,400 on DraftKings. And he saw pretty decent targets. Do need to wait. Only thing there is, do need to wait and see what's happening with Emmanuel Sanders. He was on the COVID IR list, and it hasn't been shown that he's cleared it yet. So we need to wait on that. That's the only thing sort of making me pause. Let's finish it off with tight end. Thoughts here on the position. I'm close to a guy. There's a guy for me that's close to a lock here, but I'm wondering what your thoughts are.
I did not have a guy that was close to a lock for me. I mean, unless it's one guy that maybe it's kind of obvious, but the position is just horrible. It's straight up bad. I was looking at calculated lineups, and I was like, this doesn't look that great. And I was like, who was good last week? Because at least sometimes like you can squint and see stuff. And it was like Evan Ingram, kinda, I guess. He had 46 receiving yards, but at least he had 9 targets. He's not even on the slate. Gronk, not on the slate. Richard Rodgers, not on the slate. You're getting the gist here. And then you have, I was like, well, who's just good in general? Oh, Kelsey, but he's got the Jets. There's just absolutely no way you could take a member of the Chiefs passing game against the Jets, right? Like, that game could be over in the first half. So some guys right now that are still kicking around for me, it's 2 other relatively expensive options in both Kittle and Darren Waller. I don't know if either of those guys were the ones that you were leaning heavily toward. Kittle was on track to actually pay off last week, but he obviously wound up losing his role just because of the game script and the Seattle back and forth thing. That was kind of that was the one guy I kind of anchored in where I was like, you could do it, but dude, so now you want me to play Derrick Henry at 9,500, Wilson at 8,700, Adams at 9,100, and I still get to spend 7,700 on a tight end. Like, I should be so lucky, right? But this position is so bad that you might wind up having to play Kittle and just make concessions at what I'll call a real position, because otherwise you're going to be entering the old you know, tight end guessing game where you're like, I don't know. Noah Fant could score a touchdown, and I just don't want to be. I just hate doing that. It's just no fun at all.
This is where I think it was Kittle, and this is where I think maybe a guy like Adams gets left out in the cold for me, because I think the positional scarcity and the matchup here for Kittle does weigh pretty heavily. And because you're right, basically the fact that the list was so putrid, even like one step down from Kittle, I thought, like, because even if you go one step down, you get Kelce, but that game could just be completely over. And then you get on to Waller, and maybe you squint and see it with Waller, but I don't think the price difference is big enough. And so, and then after that, it's over, right? Like, it's just...
Well, yeah, like last week, Hunter Henry was the chalk tight end, right? He was like more than 50% owned, and he showed you exactly what you get for paying $5,800 for a tight end with no track record.
Yeah, and we rolled the dice on Jared Cook, and he scored a touchdown, and like, that's all you can ask for.
Woohoo, right? Right, go us. Right. We got the guy with the touchdown.
I'm not clapping. I'm not patting ourselves on the back.
Right,
I'm
and
just
Cook,
saying
Cook was awful, too. Yeah. You know, he had four targets, so... I think that the position is utterly terrible. And, you know, I kind of treat it like catcher in baseball, and I wish it would go the way of catcher in baseball, or at least the direction it's heading, where you either just go cheap and hope to get lucky and just pay less, right? And just be like, man, I'm sinking $5,000 into this terrible position, but maybe I'll get a touchdown. Or you make concessions at other positions. Oftentimes, it is still mathematically correct to just go cheap anyway. Right now, our system is leaning towards Kittle. I'm honestly not sure if that'll hold up. Like, sometimes tight end is not as readily reported a position as some of these other ones. And, you know, there's a world where, like, say Tyler Higbee's out and we can run Gerald Everett, maybe, you know, like Everett's was reasonable last week. But yeah, it's just totally unexciting. It's a disaster position, and you just might have to pay.
My concern with Kittle last week was, you know, that New England would, you know, make him a priority and shut him down. That was not on pace to happen. It's just New England stinks so bad that they just got killed and they were able to run the ball all game. So, I feel pretty confident with Kittle, and I understand, and I get what you're saying, that the price, you know, at some point you have to, you know, figure out the price. And this is where, again, like, the scarcity of the position is just is really just the tail of the tape for me. But, obviously things will change. A couple bets that I wanted to just throw out there before we get out, we're going to get out of here. Some of these lines have moved a little bit, so it's I'm probably okay with them, but I got in Tennessee at -5.5. That's at Tennessee -6.5 going into Cincinnati. I probably could still be talked into that number. Definitely did like the 5.5 a little better, so keep an eye on the way that moves. The other ones, let's see, I had Chargers -3 going to Denver. Denver's offense is so bad this season that it's just hard to imagine how they muster a lot of points. The defense is okay, but I do think there's actually probably room for upsides. The Chargers just seem to get more and more comfortable every week with Herbert under center. So that was the other number. And then the final one that I had, and these are all going to go up on the site in terms of just they're up on our site in an article, and you can read the full write-up. I actually don't mind the Bucs -10.5 against the Giants going into New York. The Giants, again, another one of these teams is where you really can't understate. And that's all the way up to, that's up to a -11 now for Tampa Bay. But look at me, buddy, getting in the early line movement, going all the direction of your boy. But the
I know, this is why actually bets are useful to talk about early in the week. Because right. You can oftentimes get better value on the good.
But
match.
That one, it's, again, maybe even more than a lot of other seasons, there's a growing disparity between the haves and have nots in the NFL. And the Giants, the Jets, these two teams, like I said, I got in at -19.5 on KC. It feels like suicide, because this is not like some random college game where Alabama's playing, you know, some local school, and they're like -43, and you're like, I think I could do it. You know, like, like how are they going to keep it within 50? I have no idea. This is Alabama. But like, that's where -19 feels like with the NFL. And the Jets are just so bad that our system was like, yeah, dude, 19.5. Let's go. So those are just a couple of them. If you want more, we went 7-4 against the spread last week with our system, the bets that we threw out in our chat room. So we're giving those out on Sunday, and really like kind of all during the week. Like Thursday night, we have a couple. I have some bets that want to go in there. So go and check that out. You can get all this stuff at dfsr.com. dailyfantasysportsrankings.com is the site. dfsr.com/deals will get you started. That's a free trial to our NFL projection system. We've got PGA on there as well, as they're still in season. Basketball maybe coming back sooner than we expected. It's all covered under one subscription package. DFSR, Dropshippingpodcast.com/deals. We'll get you started. Go check it out, and then you can jump into the chat room. Say hi. One of us is always there, myself, James, or our boy Chris Durrell, talking really any sport that's going on. All right, buddy. We'll be back tomorrow when we break down this on a game-by-game basis.
Let's get it.